Progress.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Developer Sync call for February 1st in the year 2022. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call who can say their name so that people can associate a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
I'm Sean Allen.
I'm Gord Tischer.
Hi, I'm Borja.
I'm Red.
And hi, I'm Stuart.
Well, hello, everyone. We have a rather large auto-generated agenda today because the agenda is generated based on tickets and pull requests that have activity over the past week. There's been a lot of digging into old tickets. Thanks, Sean, for kind of, you know, for spearheading a lot of that. So we can decide, you know, as we go forward, which of the agenda points we're going to skip over. And if Sean, if I'm about to hit an agenda point and you say, oh, we can skip over that, just let me know to save time. So with that said,
before you go real quick, Joe, do you think yes. that calling the label that we would auto do for this sync is fine?
Good question. So, Sean, for those listening along, Sean is referring to a label that we'd use for changing how the agenda is generated going forward. So generating it with a label instead of just by timestamps of activity. Maybe a label would be just to be like more descriptive to somebody who's not in the Pony sort of universe yet. Like somebody who's reading along an issue ticket, say sync, what does this mean? Maybe something like discuss during sync.
Okay. I'm going to create that label now. And anything that we skip over, I'm just going to slap it on it.
Okay. Got it. Sounds good. So let's start in the RFC's repo, as we usually do when there's RFC's activity. In the PonyLang RFC's repo, we have pull request 195, initial draft for built-in FFI safe only as default. We have here some, let's see, it looks like the most recent activity here is discussion that happened just during the sync call. Is that true, or was it just after the sync call?
It was after the sync call.
Okay. So this is about dealing, I think the open discussion here is about dealing appropriately with namespace collisions, whether malicious or not malicious, and how safety is dealt with in those cases. I think a lot of the discussion we had on the sync call will suffice. The previous sync call, for those who want to kind of have context on that, is there anything new we want to discuss with this RFC?
Red, are you intending to pick this up, or are you looking for somebody else to do the next steps?
I can. I'm just going to need some guidance to the process. So, you know, we can touch base on Friday, maybe.
Okay, sounds good.
That's what office hours are for, in theory.
All right, well, if that's the case, we'll go ahead to the next RFC. RFC's pull request 194, entitled Expose Runtime Scheduler Information. So this one, let's see, I think we talked about it being, yeah, so it is ready for vote. Anything people want to discuss about this before we go ahead and vote on it? All right. I am personally in favor of this change. Anyone on the call who wants to speak up in favor or against, now is a good time, and we can consider that our voting process.
I wrote it. I'm in favor of it.
I vote yes.
Yes.
Red, Stuart, if you've read it, do you have any opinions?
I haven't read it enough, but from the title, it sounds like a good idea.
Is that you, Joe, with the echo?
As much instrumentation as we can get.
Okay. All right. So accepted. Do you have time to do
my dance? While you're doing that bookkeeping, we can move on to the next RFC pull request 193. This one is entitled Make Array Iterator Classes Private to Hide Implementation from the Client. There has been some, so Sean posted a comment talking about the kind of things that he and I discussed when we were kind of hashing out, you know, my being in favor of the RFC and his being against it, kind of coming to some points that we agree on about how to move forward. But of course, others in the community are also encouraged and welcome to disagree or agree on any of those points. I think that right now there's some remaining contention about what to do with the additional features that iterators do have in the standard, the collection iterators do have in the standard library and also could have in the future, and how to deal with that in a change like this. There's kind of a tension between wanting to have a variety of these like features available and the like opposite tension being like not wanting to proliferate the naming of new interfaces that are all in the built-in package, and this needing to be in the built-in package because it's linked in, or it's being used, it would be used by the array class. Do people have thoughts on that? The kind of the tension between those, how they would like to see things move forward, or maybe, you know, ask me to explain more for those who haven't caught up with reading on the RFC or the surrounding discussion in the chat.
So I guess one question that maybe it's obvious to some people, but why do we need to have the interface on the built-in package? Like if array
because it's needed, it's no array can't use it unless it's in the built-in package.
No, but I mean it's an interface, right? So it could an iterator anyway.
So this the change for this RFC is specifically to remove the names array keys, array pairs, etc., right? Which means and make them private, which means there has to be a new public name for what's going to be returned, right? Okay, Joe, yeah. Right? And
well, I mean, technically speaking, you can return a private class, so that's true. that's not a strict barrier, mm-hmm. That's more of a sort of philosophical barrier that people would have about. I don't have so much of a personal philosophical barrier against returning a private class and having it adhere to some well-known interfaces, even if those interfaces are outside the package. It's not necessarily a great case, but because of the challenges here, I would vote in favor of an RFC that did it that way, but I know not everyone would.
I would be against that from the standpoint of, I think that returning a private interface and having it be different than how it's done for others just makes it harder for people to understand what's going on. You look at the documentation and you go, wait, why are all the others iterator and this one is a private class? Like if with the existing one of where they're all public classes that all get documented and everything, that makes perfect sense to me. But otherwise, you know, it's like, okay, well here for how we normally do our documentation, we're going to generate documentation and then it's going to say it returns a thing for which there will be no documentation because we don't do documentation for private classes.
Okay.
Yeah, for what I we see. Put up on the yeah, website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, that's it. I think, Borja, there should only be one interface for this because in my mind, from what I talked about with Joe, we're making this change because we believe that all collections iterators will always act the same, right? They'll all have a has next, a next, And in the case of what we noticed from looking at during this RFC, all of them should be rewindable, but only some of them currently are. And if they all share an interface, then if you go to add a new feature, like we discussed last week, peek, for example, to allow you to see what the next thing is in the iterator without actually going forward to it, then we add that to the interface, and now all collections iterators must implement this. And from looking at the collections iterators, it makes sense to me that we would always want to change them together. There is not a scenario that I can think of where we would want to have them have a deviation of interface, which is why I would be in favor of replacing it with an interface in the first place.
And just to slightly amend something you said, and I think that make it better aligned with what you meant. When you talked about this is only one interface, really it's two interfaces, right? Like we have the iterator as we have it now, which is only next and has next, and we're talking about adding a new interface. You're talking about adding one new interface that has the same features as that plus additional features that all standard library collections iterators would expose by convention.
Correct. Yes.
And so there's questions around, you know, is this, does everyone kind of agree in a consensus about that kind of approach? And if so, what should the name of that new interface be? Is that the path forward that everyone wants is kind of the point that we're dealing with now.
So unfortunately, my audio cut out for some unknown reason. Just the new interface, I'm just trying to quickly skim the RFC to see what that was.
It's not in the text of the RFC itself. It's in some comments that Sean has made suggesting amendments to the RFC. There would be the continuing to be the iterator interface that we have now that has next and has next. And then in Sean's suggestion, there would be also a new interface that has additional features. Right now it's just rewind. In the future, it might be something like peek or counting the remaining elements. All standard library collections iterators would use that new interface, making the assumption that they're all able to have the same set of features, including, you know, potentially rewinding, peeking, and counting ahead, or other features like that.
Yeah. And then just a question, just in terms of counting. So, I mean, obviously we have things like sequences where it's not necessarily countable per se. A rewinding, skipping forward, that kind of makes sense. In the case of a sort of a finite collection, obviously the counting makes sense. But if those are going to be interfaces that might be used for something that you're iterating over that is generated in some sense, it just might be a consideration to keep in mind that counting.
This is part of the point of where in my comment, I very specifically say, this is for standard library collections. Of which there are no lazy ones or ones which can generate infinite data.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and that's why we wouldn't just have that one interface, right? We'd have the stripped down iterator that has just next and has next, and then we'd have the more expansive one that covers, more use cases. It has more features from the user side or more requirements from the implementer side. And the spectrum of things that could happen in between or beyond that would be covered by, you know, people being able to create their own structural types for later use just by declaring new interfaces. Mm-hmm. One of the key things we're trying to hold here is not polluting the built-in package with too many things, because everything that's in the built-in package is always in namespace scope for every file in your program. That's the challenge with adding too many names to this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, even just from a language point of view, I mean, I like the fact that the built-in package has a very limited set, so it has a nice clarity to it. Whereas you have some other languages where the amount of stuff that's effectively in a built-in is massive, and it actually, in my mind, it detracts from the value of the language.
So do people have any further thoughts on if they have alternative suggested paths apart from the one that Sean has suggested, or ideas about naming? Otherwise, we can just continue in the asynchronous discussion in the RFC ticket and in the Zulip chat, where there's been some discussion on this as well.
Also,
anybody have thoughts they want to share here on the call?
I would say if folks do agree as well, but they don't have something that they with what I put in as the points that Joe and I came into agreement on, if you agree with those points and you think that's a good path forward, please note that on the RFC issue.
I mean, from my point of view, and just in terms of the gist of it, the principle of the idea actually seems good to me, to kind of clarify it through interfaces and then make those things private. The principle seems to be on a good path.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing more to discuss on that, we'll move on to pull requests in the PonyC repo. I'm going to quickly scan through a few of these and make sure I'm not bringing up ones that are already merged. So we have this pull request from Sean in the PonyC repo, pull request 3978, add the no doc annotation. I have not had a chance to look at this personally yet. I plan to look at it soon. Unless it's tiny, I won't review it here on the call. Maybe it is tiny.
It looks like it's not tiny, but it is.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of files touched, but you're just adding no doc to all those test classes. Interesting that it seems to break the GitHub syntax highlighting. So that's unfortunate. I guess we'll need to update the GitHub linguist source code for that.
Yeah, none of our syntax highlighters support annotations.
Yeah, they were added after those were written, and they're not very commonly used yet. It seems like they'll be a lot more commonly used with this change. For those who like the standard library include their test code in the same package as the main code. So I'm just scrolling past all of the examples of it being added to files. The docgen pass, there's a removed function is for testing, and that's replaced with if has annotation no doc. That seems pretty darn simple of a change, and I'm good to approve it. Anybody else have thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I was going to say that maybe we also want this annotation to apply to like public variables.
What do you mean by public variables?
So for example, we have in the JSON packets, we have a public variable that's going to be exposing the looping annotation, and maybe for some reason you want to add this annotation to it.
By public variable, are you thinking of like a field?
Yeah, a field.
Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, can it apply to a field?
Not at the moment, based on this invitation. This is replacing the existing hack with using the annotation, and it doesn't go any further than the existing hack, which only dealt with classes, interfaces, traits, actors, and functions and behaviors on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think for now, it seems that maybe putting it on a field might not be like worth it. Like, I guess if you don't want to expose it, you don't want the documentation, just make it private. But I don't know how hard it would be to support it.
If you wanted to add it for that, I could tell you how to make the change in approximately 45 seconds. If you look in syntax.c, the very last file included in this, do you see that nice long list of fall through case statements for compiler tokens?
Yeah.
Okay. Add the tokens that you want the annotation to be applicable to that list. Done. Mm-hmm. That's what would have to change in the future to make that annotation work on others. And then, yeah, that's it. That's all.
Yeah, okay.
Annotations are pretty easy to add in terms of for that. They could be complex or not complex depending on the implementation of them themselves.
Okay. So I clicked approve on that. So unless Borja, you wanted to add further suggestions or changes to that, then Sean, I'd say you can merge at will.
Oh boy, there's going to be a whole bunch of things I have to go update to use this.
Now, let's see. We have another pull request, 3953 from Jason, and there's been so this is called ban variables whose capability is unsound to alias. So that means things like avoiding showing a compiler error when someone tries to have a stable name like a variable whose capability is ephemeral, because such things are by nature not ephemeral. So Jason has been doing some work on this. I think he's had some conflicts come up and hasn't been able to work on it, but Sean has been working on it. Sean, is there anything you want to say about the status of this?
Do you remember last time when we were trying to figure out why the tests were failing and we were completely and utterly flummoxed?
Yes.
They were failing because they should have been failing. It would print the error, but it was also going all the way through linking because there was no return false for one case.
Okay. Missing a return false. Okay. And that was in new code that was missing a return false or existing code?
Yep. New code.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Anything else you want to discuss on this before we move on?
No, I mean, I left some questions for Jason on things, and I made a change, which I think is the correct thing that fixes a bug. But either way, it works. The tests do at least. And but I think from looking at the logic of his code, so it's at a point though where he can finish it off without like logistic cleanup.
Cool. Yeah, without that weird test issue. Good. So, all right, we have another pull request from Red. Red, I saw you stepped away a little bit ago. Are you back, or should we delay?
We can skip this one. It was the thing that's on there was just my question for Red if he was still working on it. And we discussed that earlier. Yes.
Okay. So. So Red, is there anything you do want to discuss about this, like about testing for it or anything like that? Do you want to talk about that now or talk about that later?
We can talk about it later if you want. Basically, is anyone else hearing an echo? Is it just me?
I think it's Joe, and he just muted himself.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll try to mute myself aggressively.
Okay. So basically, the question is, what, if anything, should we be testing to make sure that the functionality is functional? And so that's like a brief conversation we can have just to make sure that, you know, do we have like linking tests and all that kind of stuff in as the part of the PR in order to make sure that, you know, as future changes go, they don't accidentally break it and nobody notices. That's it.
So I think based on what we have now, I thought about this for a little bit since we talked, right? And at this point in time, I think it would be reasonable to, in the libponyc-run directory, right? Create a application there where there's a main.pony. And it also there's an LLVM IR, which does something stupidly simple, right? And the entire purpose of it is it Does it link and run? And for running, that just means for how that thing works, it needs to have an exit code of 0, which means if you literally just have it link and do one tiny little thing when it runs, like add 1 + 1 and not even output it or whatever, that's at least enough of a test to know whether somebody broke it in the future.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, except for I was also going to say, like, yeah, if we could just like add 1 + 1 and then on the pony side, check to see that the result is correct and then do exit code 0, you know, and do exit code 1 if the result was not correct.
It would be just one
further step. So, yeah, I think, yeah, that kind of end-to-end test of this feature would be great just to prove that it keeps working and in its barest sense. Okay, well, moving on then, we've got, let's see, pull request 3923, work in progress, introduced apply getters for JSON data. So Stuart, I know you're out here on the call. Let's see, it looks like Sean's made some comments, but I'm not sure if you've had time to review those yet. Do you have anything you want to talk about here?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to review them. I've just been a bit swamped with other things. But I'll pick it up again. And then there was also when we discussed this last time, it turned out that there's possibly a issue in handling of member data versus methods. So I still need to get back to just implementing a test case for that, just so that we can highlight that other concern. But yeah, it's my bad that I haven't managed to pick this up.
So I was going to say that, yeah, I remember that the last time we discussed this, I think the summary was that we will try to fix whatever issue we had with type checking of public fields. But yeah, I don't know how hard it would be to fix that. So I think in the meantime, or even apart from that, adding these functions solve a real problem right now. So I would be all for it.
Okay, cool. Well, then I'll, I feel a bit bad because I know that I was meant to pick this up, but I'll make the changes. I see that Sean just mentioned some just formatting issues. I think I have my settings set to tabs and 2 spaces for tabs instead of spaces. So I'll tidy that up a bit. And then send it in for review. And then I'll try and get back to just implementing a kind of a test scenario for the type checking problem.
One thing that I think would be helpful for me is understanding, I completely believe the statement that this makes things easier to work with. Some concrete examples of how I would be great most for my edification of learning, because I rarely use that package. So understanding, hey, this is what I had to do beforehand. This is how it sucked. Look at how much easier it is now with this would be great, and could also be the basis of stuff to go into release notes when it goes in.
Okay. Where would be the best place to kind of put those examples?
I would say you could put them right on the PR. Or really, if you want to, you could start doing up the release notes now, and in the release notes, have the release notes explain what you had to do before and can still do, but what you can, how it's easier if you go through the apply method, and which also then, not even just even in the release notes, actually, this could be actually in the documentation itself for the JSON doc, now that I think of it, right? Then it's there for people forever. And if it's just there as part of the PR, I can read it and understand better, and that would be great for me.
Mm. Okay, no, that's fair. I'm quite happy to carry on with that. I apologize for my slow turnaround time on it.
This is a volunteer project. Like, whatever turnaround time we get from folks, and that's great. Every little bit helps.
Cool.
So, we have a rather large auto-generated entity. I also wanted to make sure there was time. You know, we traditionally do this around the 30-minute mark. We're at the 38-minute mark right now. I wanted to check in and see if anyone had any special topics they wanted to raise while we're here together before we move on with the auto-generated agenda.
I don't have anything specific in terms of PonyC itself, but I just thought I'd mention I'm busy working on a Raft implementation in Pony.
Oh, cool.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll be excited to see how that turns out. And if you have any questions or things like idioms, things you wanted to ask for review or ask questions, feel free. I think we'll be excited to see that come out and excited to help out how we can.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks.
Great. So let's see. We have pull request 3882 add Linux Musl test on ARM.
It looks like this is actually might be a failure in the test harness, not in our code.
Okay. So. Anything else you want to talk about for that?
Not right now.
Okay. There's this other pull request from you, 3664. It's a draft pull request. Replace type variables in a single sweep during reification. This is from a few years back. You pinged me 2 times, and I feel bad about not answering either one of them. Not sure how both of those slipped past me. But let's see. Are you still running into a failure? It looks like you just got rebased onto the current main branch. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. And you're still seeing an assertion failure of some kind?
Correct.
Okay.
And I don't have any idea where to start looking for that.
I'm going to quickly peek at it. And if I can't figure it out quickly, then I'll look back. So the test suite has not an assertion failure, but it has like things like argument not assignable to parameter. Is that what you're referring to? Is there something else?
Take a look.
I clicked on the first one, the Arch 64 Linux.
Yep, I don't know why. That's right. I don't know why this would break the vector stuff, or just these things that it breaks.
Okay, let's see. Argument type is val a share. Parameter type requires a share ephemeral. The ephemeral part shouldn't matter, but this is val a versus a. And so any share is not a subtype of a val. The type parameter has no lower bounds. Val arrow a share, val arrow a share is not a pairwise subtype of a val and a tag. My initial thought about this is that I don't fully remember exactly how this works in the PonyC compiler, but there is some special logic in the subtyping checks. So I think that would be in subtype.c. There's some special logic that deals with noticing. So if you have two type parameters, A and B, that have the same constraint, right? That doesn't mean that you can count them as being like subtypes or supertypes of one another, because they could be occupying different areas within that constraint. So for example, if you had A that was bounded by share and B that was bounded by share, you can't really do much without knowing what the reification of those is, like what the type argument is, because it could be that they're both val, it could be that they're both tag, it could be that one is val and the other is tag, or vice versa. So there's special logic in subtype.c that says, okay, if I know I'm looking at the same type parameter from the same reification of it, right, that I know that these are going to share, I know that if one is val, then the other is also val, or if one is tagged, the other is also tagged. So that there's there's certain things you can do with type parameter subtyping when you know it's the same type parameter versus it being possibly different type parameters, like the A and B case I mentioned earlier, or A from one class and A from another class, because they're usually all called A. I don't know much more than that off the top of my head, but we could talk about it in more detail at a later point to try to dig through, but that would be me digging through code alongside you digging through code as well. And that's kind of what I know, is that there's special logic for when it's the same type parameter. And my guess would be that's what's going wrong here. That something in that got thrown out of whack by the change that this pull request makes. Does that make sense as a general thing to look for?
Yes.
Cool. And again, sorry for not responding in either September of 2020 or February of 2021. Apologize about that. So moving on to, we have pull request 3663.
So 3679.
Did I miss it? Okay, sorry.
Yes. So
3679. Unicode string. Okay. So this is a pull request related to an RFC proposing different ways of handling Unicode than string currently does. So it'd be a kind of big changes to the string class. So Roland worked on a pull request that involved, you know, that kind of demonstrate what these changes would look like and was a proof of concept to show that it works, that goes along with the RFC. But as far as I know, the RFC itself has not been accepted yet, right?
Correct. So
okay.
What would be the next step with that RFC? Because I know that you and Jason were quite keen on getting this in or something along these lines. Is what's in this PR at this point, if we can get it fixed up, is that what is this pretty much in line with what then would need to go into the RFC so we could do it? Or
I personally was quite cautious about this RFC. From my memory, I have not looked at it recently, but from my memory, there were things in this RFC that aren't necessarily how I personally would want them to be. I think it's not the case that I was really pushing to get this through. I was, you know, questioning certain aspects of it. And I think that, Yeah, my skepticism may have been part of the reason for it stalling. To be quite honest, like I wasn't intending to put up roadblocks, but I am skeptical about certain aspects of it. So I would need to go back and kind of review that and kind of, you know, regroup on what my objections were or still are, and how they might be resolved and that sort of thing. Yeah, kind of at a high level, there's different ways of approaching the string problem, but at a high level, I think the approach I would favor most is one that includes both byte-wise and Unicode code point-wise operations on string. And I think, as I recall, this RFC seems to take the hard stance of the string should only include Unicode code point-wise operations. And if you need to work with bytewise operations, you need to like copy it into an array, for example, which is not philosophically, I think, where I land. But yeah, we could go back and review in more detail at some point, either now or later.
Okay. Let's find some time at some point to chat, or you, I, or just in general, maybe on a sync where we set it aside for it. Because I think, you know, when trying to help somebody with Unicode stuff the other day, what's there is really kind of that we have is not easy to work with. There's a lot of things you can't do. So getting an improvement there would be great. As I said, when this was first starting, I was going to trust you and Jason on it because you seem to have thoughts and things, and mine is mostly just like, please don't screw up the thing where I can do a string so that it's so that it bites, and also so that, and then so people can do Unicode things. That's all I really care about.
Yeah, it's a tricky problem space, and I've been kind of back and forth on different ways that I think are best to approach it. And I think it's just it's hard to find something that seems overall optimal, and so you kind of have to take compromises somewhere. And it's not exactly clear to me where the best place to take compromises is.
Would it be possible maybe to have Unicode string and byte string as types, and then have them separated, and maybe as long as we can get an interoperation thing from being able to move in some fashion if you need to, or maybe even you don't need to, but just having the two separate ones somehow so they're interoperable, and where you would normally get back a string from some things, you could do a generic type perhaps over it to get either, you know, one of the two. Would that be a way maybe to handle something like what you're thinking of, John?
It could be. I think it's just one of those things where the devil's in the details. And there are things that there are things that become problematic that don't seem problematic at first. Like, so I think that's a good line to go down. But like, yeah, once you dig into the details, like there could be things like, oh, well, I guess we can't really do it that way because of this reason, or that's going to cause this kind of performance problems from this kind of copying or extra object allocation, that sort of thing. So I think that pursuing that kind of thinking is probably fruitful, but it may not be exactly what we're thinking up ahead of time.
Okay. I will ask you some more questions, which are unimportant to other folks on the call right now, when we talk on Friday, to probe it a couple of things.
Okay.
What are the gist of the operations that they're trying to add in for Unicode? I mean, Unicode is just notoriously a pain to work with. I mean, obviously it's nice from a usage point of view, but in terms of actually working with all the different code points, it's a real pain. So,
the key way of summarizing this change is saying that, if this RFC proposal was adopted, then going forward in the future, basically the only way to access string is with the assumption that it's UTF-8, code points being iterated over, rather than, like right now, the string class largely, exposes a lot of bytewise operations and a few, operations assuming, what is it? Either UTF-8 or UTF-32. I forget the subtle distinction between the two.
It's a tricky one because philosophically I can understand the desire for treating it as a pure UTF-8 worldview, and as I'm iterating, I'm either skipping over two or three bytes or one byte depending what I'm doing. But just from a day-to-day programmatic point of view, in terms of coding, we're so used to being able to access it as bytes, and we do it all the time. I must admit, I'd be inclined to err towards not taking this strong philosophical stance.
Yeah, I think the key area where you run into trouble is with random access. If you're representing it in UTF-8 encoding under the hood, like rather than, you know, for example, you could represent it as an array of, you know, U32s under the hood, for example, and say this is an array of code points rather than a sequence of bytes that we're encoding using UTF-8 as a set of code points. But it's not as optimal, right? Like UTF-8 is nice because it lets you save bytes in the common case of not having like non-ASCII code points. But random access becomes very tricky in UTF-8. I don't know if tricky is the right word, just kind of not feasible. Being able to have random access into parts of a string
is it enables a lot of use cases. I mean, In terms of UTF-8, I mean, and I actually haven't looked, but are there any utilities just for UTF-8 handling? Because maybe rather than trying to change the string implementation to be UTF-8, it might be more than sufficient to just, you know, create a builder class where I can manipulate UTF-8 and then push it back into string.
Yeah, I think that it could also be a fruitful line of investigation. It's just, yeah, there's a lot of details to talk about exactly how that manifests, how it interoperates with existing stuff, I think all of these are, there's fruitful ideas to investigate in kind of all these areas, but it's hard to know exactly where to choose. But random access is a tricky one, right? Because it's almost as if you want to be able to like carry away like a cursor into a UTF-8 string, like, because it's not often that you truly want to do random access. And so it's a little bit of a misnomer. Like what you often want to do is, you know, consume up something up to a certain point or keep track of certain offsets, right? And remember those offsets and be able to quickly pinpoint the location in memory from the offset that you grab. And so you almost kind of want to work in byte offsets. But the stance of avoiding, you know, byte wise operations and byte offsets means that the byte offsets have to be hidden somehow. So that like you're not relying on the number of bytes, or I don't know. In my opinion, they shouldn't really be hidden, but the easiest path should be something that encourages you to think in terms of code points, but that the byte offset information is available to you both, you know, for things like, you know, allocating, knowing how many bytes involved is a helpful thing. And also being able to, like carry away a cursor and bring it back later to get back to that same point in memory without needing to count code points to get there, I think is an important one.
I have a suggested solution. Should I mention it here or should I drop it in Zulip?
I think you can mention it here, but I think any further solution that we look at is like, it should be kind of dealt with more rigorously than we can deal with in the next 5 minutes of the call. So dropping it in Zulip is a great place to continue discussing, I think.
Okay, but high level, the way that Beam does it is they just have a type annotation on a string, and then they implement all of the various functions on whatever you consider the string interface to be. So you've got Latin, for which is basically 7-bit ASCII. You've got UTF, which for things that are expandable, and then you've got UTF-16 and UTF-32. Which means you then basically make a trade-off of performance. If you're going to have performance, smaller memory, if you're going to use UTF-8, or faster performance, but using more memory if you use UTF-16 or 32. So it's a clean way of doing it.
Yeah, I have looked into things like that in the past. I say this, I don't want to discourage you from looking into it, because I think this could be fruitful, but like the challenges, just so you're aware and kind of like, you know, looking ahead to those, the challenges I ran into were, you know, that was my first inclination as well. The challenges I ran into were to this like bifurcating paths of either one idea would be to have all of those, classes be, subtypes of a common interface or trait. And from that interface or trait, you know, like, so that would be the standard interoperation point would be, okay, I'm holding, if string were an interface instead of a concrete class, and there were different kinds of string that can implement that, right? That's kind of the most obvious way of approaching that. Although it leads to some performance possible issues with lots of virtual calls for things that you hold as an abstract string instead of a concrete string. So there's like potential virtual call problems with performance. And if you try to mitigate those by using type parameters, then you lose some of the interoperability benefits. although you can kind of have both. I don't know, like that's the approach I was originally first advocating for, is something along those lines, Red. So I think it is worth investigating, although I kind of, I dropped it at some point because of the challenges, but I'm not saying you should drop it. I think it's worth talking about more.
Okay.
And if you talk about your ideas in the Zulip, I can go back and find where I previously talked about them in Zulip, and you can read through what I wrote there and see how it impacts your thinking.
Bingo. And especially since we're now going to move it so we can actually compile and inline with the Pony runtime in the future as well. Hopefully some of those virtual calls will end up just being inlined.
I'm not sure that the runtime bitcode helps a lot with inlining those functions, because those would largely be between different areas of Pony code. And so things that the inline gains that you can make are probably already being made, because there's not really the barrier between the runtime and the, and there could be cases. There could be cases.
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anything people want to squeeze in before we adjourn at the end of our time block here?
I will just say that I'm going through all of the rest of the things, and almost all of them were either my updating that this still crashes or whatever for particular things, or adding labels to them that never got added. And I'm going through and putting the few sync things on ones that would actually be something for us to go over next time, which is very, very few of them so far.
Great. Thank you for that bookkeeping. That's helpful. All right. Thanks everyone for joining along or listening to the recording. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks. Bye.